Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. I'm your host. Today I have the pleasure of having Dave Ferguson. He is a sports fundamentalist. He talks about sports and he has a show also on Blog Talk Radio. If you'd like to speak with him, please give us a call at 347-324-3460 or you can pose a question in the chat room. Dave, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you having me, Tim. It's great to be on your show.
Great. Now, kind of a disadvantage because I'm not into a lot of sports, but I'm really interested in a lot of the topics. I guess to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself and how did you get into covering sports topics?
Okay, well, I'll sort of give you the Reader's Digest condensed answer. And,
okay.
And being a parent of two active boys, that's kind of where I get, well, it's kind of throwing me into sports. But even prior to that, I played sports myself, whether it was tennis or hockey or soccer and baseball were the main sports that I played as a youngster growing up, and you know, always sniffing at the heels of those just in front of me getting to pro leagues and things of that nature, but never able to be at the right place at the right time. So in having my own kids, I'm not one of these parents that lives vicariously through their kids and stuff like that, and trying to live my life through theirs, but it didn't whatever they want to do, I always encourage them in sports. So in getting past that hurdle, so I was coach many years in a number of sports, trainer, board member, official, a lot of different things, reporter. I got into freelance journalism a number of years ago, and I did radio a number of years ago, and getting back to it over the past couple of few years, and I was posed by a magazine a number of years back to write something on stress in sports with regards to hockey and hockey parents. Well, I didn't really know a whole heck of a lot about it, and at that point in time, I really didn't want to do that, but being the kind of good sport I am and wanting to get my name out there and writing and things like that, I did take the job, and the magazine fell flat, unfortunately, not because of what I wrote, but anyways, after 6 months out on the shelf, it did kind of fell flat in its face, and the funding was pulled behind from its major backers. So from that point, I got back into radio at a radio station called University of Western Ontario, CHRW, and up here in London, Ontario, Canada, and wanted to do my own sports show and started off with stress and sports and realized very quickly that's going to be rather pigeonholing myself. So hence rebranded, changed the title to Beyond the Cheers. I talk about anything now, and I've been doing it for the past 2 years on Blog Talk Radio and certainly at CHRW for 2 years prior to that. It's called Beyond the Cheers, and I talk about anything about sports, typically that does not see the light of day on your typical jock shows that talk about football, baseball, hockey, and soccer. However, I do talk about those, but there's other things in sports that need to get some media attention, and then that's where I come in and talk about that. If it's, you know, athletes with breast cancer, I've had shows on that particular topic. Concussions, of course, are rather hot, no matter who you talk to these days, violence in sports, and a whole myriad of things. So, like I said, Tim, if it has a finger in the world of sports, then I talk about it.
Okay. The pressure to win at all costs. You know, that can happen. The pressure of life, the pressure of parents pushing a living through their kids. Why is the pressure to win at all costs?
Well, there's a number of reasons, and it can go all the way up to the Olympic athlete, but we'll start at the grassroots level. With kids, there's an awful lot of pressures on them from parents, and especially even coaches. And, of course, parents do turn into coaches as we need the volunteers to stand behind the bench and try and instruct these kids as to how to play and be sportsmanlike and so on and so forth. But the pressure to win is increasingly getting from the mind of the adult and put into the backpack of the kid that goes out there and tries to do their best. And unfortunately, it does deflate some of the fun out of a lot of the sports for kids. because there's a lot of pressures on them, and that's why you see the statistics today are 70% of kids leave organized sports between the ages of 8 and 12. Now, that used to be 8 and 13, but it's the number has shrunk a little bit. However, there are a spare number of kids leaving sports because of there's just too much pressure on them. You know, you get kids that go to, we'll take baseball, for instance. The kids get driven by their parent to the baseball field. They get coached all the way to the game. They get coached at the game by the coach. They get coached all the way home with things they didn't do on the field. So there's a lot of negative stuff with kids. And, you know, not every parent. I'm not trying to paint every parent with the same brush, because there's a whole bucket of them out there that are just great and do a fantastic job with the kids and coaching. But there are those, in like any group of anything in society, there's always the bad apple that spoils the bunch. So you've got, you know, a lot of pressures on them to win. And mm-hmm. win at all costs is not a good thing. And that takes goes from kids at the grassroots level all the way out to the Olympic athlete. And, you know, if they don't win, gee whiz, you know, who's there to pick up the pieces of these athletes or youngsters? As to, you know, parents aren't always necessarily equipped to deal with that unless they've got a really great social structure of for the kids, for themselves, for the support. And if they can't provide that, then what's going to happen to the child? And they end up, you know, whether it's where they get to be an Olympic athlete and don't get the medal around their neck, then what happens after that when they lose?
Wow. Do you think there's a lesson in really losing?
Yeah, there is. You really got to get back to the basics. And, you know, this is one of the things, and I didn't mention this at the top of the show, Tim, is one of the, and I'm just a one guy here, one man show, but, you know, that was my mantra at one point, is to try and return the state of normalcy, and I'm marching to my own drummer here. It's just the state of normalcy for kids in sports, because a lot of things have shifted over the years. You know, the sportsmanship is gone. The handshakes before and after the game is gone in a lot of cases. The fun is gone. You know, you get kids who get dragged to sporting events, to kicking and screaming that they don't want to go because there's just too much pressure on them, and they'd rather stay at home. And mind you, there's other things, of course, that take kids away from sports. You've got video games and everything of that nature. But sports itself is used to be, and it still is for many, a good learning lesson for kids. It's a good maturing process. It's a good way to build a social network. It's a great way to learn team philosophy. A lot of life skills you'll learn from sports, but if you're in a bad kettle of fish where people don't share that same philosophy or thought process, well, the kids are at stake and the kids are in trouble.
Wow. What is an appropriate age for you to introduce sports to your preschooler, or is it a certain age group? Hey, before we do t-ball or football, is there a benchmark? Hey, start at this age. Don't start at 3 years old. Or
well,
some sports you can start at 3 years old.
You can, and there's a lot of other groups out there that even introduce young kids that are barely out of diapers into gymnastics and things of that nature. But it's you know, at that point, it's more of an exercise thing. So that to me is not really much of a sport. Sports for kids, and I had mine in sports at the age of 4, playing hockey and baseball. But that's because they wanted to. I didn't ask them what they want to do. I didn't tell them what they want. I asked them, and that's what they decided to do. But typically, you see kids anywhere from 4 to 5 years of age. The trouble becomes, though, Tim, even though you get at that sports and then you get into that competitive atmosphere, well, gee whiz, my kid's the next Wayne Gretzky or the next Peyton Manning at the age of 6 years of age, and all of a sudden there are 2 or 3 days a week where they spend for sporting events turns into 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and, you know, they're trying to tell kids you know, how to pitch properly by the age of 7. Well, gee whiz, their arms aren't even formed muscle-wise, and their joints aren't even capable of throwing an 80-mile-an-hour fastball at the age of 7, even though some coaches want them to do it.
Wow. And I know for band instruments, we tell, you know, they can play strings at any age, you know, unless they have them, they're ready for it, but they can't play a trumpet in the fifth grade.
Yeah.
They got to be a certain size to play a trumpet, even a woodwind. But, you know, that same philosophy, because you got to physically be ready, what is the physically to be ready for a sports like, you know, football or a sport like baseball or something?
What age, Tim, you looking for that maybe?
Or? Yeah, what age do you think is going to be appropriate?
Well, I think you mentioned earlier, Don, just a few minutes ago, about t-ball. Like, t-ball starts at It varies from organization to organization, but it's good to introduce it to them at age of four, think, or five, if the child's ready for it. You know, obviously, if the sports organization certainly has their wits about them, you know, you always get the parent coming, well, gee whiz, you know, my son or daughter's played blast ball or t-ball for 2 or 3 years. I think they're ready for the next level. Well, the sporting organization, if they've got any, like I said, any smarts about them, should be able to see whether that child's ready or not to go into the next level where they've got a pitching machine with a ball throwing being tossed at them, whether they're ready for that. It's not every child's different. You can't treat them all the same, saying four is the right age or five is the right age. Everybody grows and matures and things at different levels. Good gosh, you see 10-year-old kids that are nearly 6 feet tall. So everybody's got a different way they grow. So it's up to the sporting organization that's like I said, got some smarts in order to recognize that. And, you know, sure, they can put some age guidelines to it, but, you know, if a 5-year-old or 6-year-old is ready to play at the next level, then I think you also have to challenge them too, because otherwise they get bored to tears and start picking up sand and making sandcastles in a ball field.
Oh, wow. Now, talking about, you know, Tiger Woods started fairly young, and his dad pushed him, got him to be where he is today. But what do you think would happen a couple of years ago with him? You think it was just burnout, or he didn't play it again? You know, I don't want to say it's something to do with his marriage, but something in him just didn't think it was clicked in him that things all of a sudden changed.
Yeah. My honest opinion with that is I think, the marriage, of course, you know, a golf club in your back window is not going to help matters either, but it's I think he just buckled under the pressure because he's trying to play in too many camps, and I'm not going to, you know, talk about Tiger about some of the things he did on off the golf course and away from the backyard of his house kind of thing. But, you know, they succumb to pressures, and all of these high level athletes and professionals, they're tempted by other things that sway them from away from sport, and you know, it's kind of a detriment, and they can only handle so much. The human person and the human psyche can only handle so much, and unfortunately Tiger kind of succumbed to kind of that and kind of just buckled under it, and he's taken a long time to climb back up. He's still climbing one step at a time, but does he have another few good golf games? And I think he does, but he's got to get back up on top.
Wow. So do you think his dad just pushed him so hard during his youthful days to the point that, I'm not going to say his dad lived through him, but he did make him introduce him to the game and made him the great person he is in the sport. Then, like, for example, you reach your peak and you just twitter out, and then you get the second win in your life and start over again?
Well, there's a couple of different thought processes with that. I'll share one with you.
Okay.
There's a child that I know quite well, and he played hockey for a number of years. He's in his late 20s now. He could have made it to the NHL. However, he played 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and his dad had him on so many darn teams. I couldn't remember all the teams that the young lad was on. But at the age of 16, he quit playing hockey. Today, at 28 years of age, he cannot pick up a hockey stick. He cannot go out and play because he's just so mentally exhausted with that entire thing. It was just burnt him basically out from even enjoying the sport. He can't even watch hockey. However, there are specific individuals. You take Michael Jordan, you take Tiger Woods, you take a bunch of the pro athletes there today. Some of them can deal with the high pressures, but they're few and far between. They're not all of them can, and that's where we run a risk, because we, you know, you start pushing a little bit too much on some of these youngsters or these middle teen athletes, and all of a sudden they don't want to play anymore. But Tiger Woods, for instance, yeah, his dad pushed him, but I think Tiger would have pushed back if he didn't want it.
Wow. And even taking from Tiger itself and then dealing with the average person, well, I'm not going to say Lamar, who was with the Mavericks, he didn't seem like he just really was into it this year. But taking that, the pressure of being who you are, what's your opinion in that particular situation? When at all costs, do you think it's the pressure, the reason he didn't perform, or do you think it was just his heart wasn't in it?
There's something... Okay. There's a few things I can answer to that. The win-at-all-cost mentality is instilled upon our even at the grassroots level and all the way it takes up to the pro level, and you still see it quite predominantly today. There are athletes, and I'll get back to the Lamar and the story in a second, but there are athletes at the Olympic level going back to 1976 that played in Montreal, Quebec, in the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
and they lost. This particular athlete lost. I'm not going to mention male or female, but this particular athlete lost. This person was expected to win at least, at minimum, a silver in their respective sport. They lost. They came in sixth place. That person carried that stress and that win-at-all-cost mentality in their backpack, if you will, up until a year ago, until they saw someone else from the Olympics by the name of Jason Dorland, who was also under this win-at-all-costs thumbprint, who's changed his life around because of his wife, who was also an Olympic athlete, did not share that same attitude. Her attitude was, I'll go out there and do my best. She won medals. She did very, very well. But you don't necessarily need to have that drive there. If you have that mindset of doing well, you should be fine. Now, you go back to Lamar, and you're talking about some of these players not anting up for their current season and stuff. They buckle under the pressure. There's only so much one person can take. You can only take so much stress that your coach is putting on you before you say, well, you know, this is just too much. I can't do it. You're unable to focus, and you get to the point, and you see a lot of athletes, you see it a lot of teams, where they just try too hard to go out there and win the game, and they're trying so hard that they've lost all the lessons they've learned. They're going out there looking more like Three Stooges on a basketball court or on an ice rink trying to play hockey or basketball. And you know, it's the pressure that these people are under to win, that they succumb to, and some of them turn to drugs and alcohol and develop abuse issues afterwards.
Wow. Dealing with that life cycle, you know, you have a certain life cycle in your career in sports, physically, mentally, that you can be able to do the things that you were at 21. You mature, you know, your mid-20s and late 20s, and you kind of peak out. But in his particular situation, you come from a great franchise, come to a just recent winning franchise in Dallas, and is it that much pressure that's placed on you that you just can't focus? Or, you know, a performer can usually perform at a certain level regardless, but it's just the vocal of the pressure that's so great that it won't allow you to focus and do your particular job. Like, for example, even from performance of a musician to a speaker or so forth, you can do at least the basics to get by and you still do it well, but you're saying with all the pressure itself, I mean, this can interfere with you that you can't even do your basics.
Exactly. Well, your basics are still there. You're still, like, a lot of sports, a lot of it's just since a lot of these high-level athletes have been doing it for so long, they could do a lot of the moves and shots and stuff in their sleep. But it's just sometimes you just lose the heart to go out and play because you just, you know, you've got not only pressure, like I said, from your coaching staff, you got pressure not only in inside of you because you know you're not playing at that same level, and that could be because You're a few years older. You're not able to, you know, your late 20s, early 30s. You're not able to compete with the 21 and 18 year olds or 19 year olds coming up. There's a whole myriad of things as to why, you know, athletes just lose their drive and determination. You know, and certainly stress and pressure is one of them, and their body's just not going to cooperate with them at some point because they're reaching the end of their career where they just can't seem to do it anymore. And you can train as much as you want, but at some point your body just says, hey, this is enough.
Wow. In dealing with the Olympics in London this year, I mean, these people have been training for like 4 years straight, I mean, constantly. And is it repetition of them doing it constantly for a four-year period to get them ready for the Olympics to perform? And is that the sense that they don't buckle as much under pressure? It's just embedded in for so long they just it just happens, and they just put the extra oomph into it. What do you think about that regarding the Olympics itself?
Well, they do have the pressures with them at that particular point, as any other athlete do. I mean, they've been working for 4 or 8 years, depending upon if they're going through and going for a second Olympics. The pressure is still on them. And you mentioned repetition. Well, there's a lot of athletes that I've talked to and on my show, and they prepare for the game itself differently than others. They don't go through a lot of different modes and things to get ready for the game at hand. Some of them will relax. They'll lay back. They'll get a massage. They'll do other things. So they're not as focused, and they take the attention away from the performance itself, where others will have to get into the sport and visualize what they're going to do before they get to the starting gate or the starting block before they perform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Olympic athletes are a different caliber, as you say, that they've been doing it for a number of years. However, they're still under the thumbnail of the same pressures and stresses that, you know, youngsters and other pro athletes are under as well, and perhaps even greater so, because if they've been pushed so hard and pushed to the max, that you're going to win a gold medal. But they all have a good idea, as because there's games and there's trials and things leading up to the Olympic Games. They have an idea where they're sitting, and they need to know who they need to focus on or who their actual competition may be. So it might be a little I don't want to make light of it, but it might be a little more easier to ascertain where they sit in the pecking order, I guess, in their given sport. But they're still under the gun for the same pressures, and even more so because they're representing their country, they're representing their Olympic Committee. There's also the seeding aspect in. Well, gee whiz, you know, John Smith's going into this sport, you know, and he's seeded number 2 in the world, and he goes there and he has a complete flop and puts out a poor performance. Did he buckle to the pressure? Likely. But and why? Because a number of reasons. Maybe he wasn't prepared, maybe he had an injury, or just couldn't handle the stress on the world stage. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame when you get there.
Well, regarding enhanced drugs, you know they're going to get tested for it. So why will they go to the point of using drugs to enhance their performance and knowing that they're going to have to take a blood test or a urine sample? Why go to risk all of that, and you know that you're trying to find a way to cheat the system, then versus just do what comes naturally to you, or you've been trained to do?
Right.
Why take the risk?
Well, a lot of them are at that point, either whether it's age or whether it's injuries or whatever else they need to overcome, and some of them, quite honestly, are not even aware whether coaches or trainers are giving them until it comes mm-hmm. time that you've got to, you know, provide a blood sample or urine sample. However, having said that, you know, every Olympics or every event that these athletes, and not just Olympic athletes, but any athlete goes to, and if they are taking something like EPO or human growth hormones or anything of that nature, the chemists and these people manufacturing different ways to beat the system are always, and I mean, and I stress always, they're always months, if not years, well in advance of whatever is the banned substance du jour from the International Olympic Committee. Because, you know, sure, some of them still get caught doing some of the older stuff that's still out there, and maybe their trainers don't have access to some things, or the players don't have access to some of these different ways. But it's very difficult, like with EPO, that's you're putting... it's oxygenated blood back into your system. That is very, very difficult to even track, even in today's standards with blood tests and urine samples. So, but the athletes always have that one step. They want to take it one step further. Okay, well, I don't think I'm where I'm at to be able to get the gold, medal, silver, or bronze, but gee whiz, what if I try this? You know, the risk of getting caught is, like I said, the chemists are so far in advance of the banned substance list. There's a 50-50 crapshoot chance. You know, and I'd hazard a guess from what I'm reading, the stats out there, there's at least 20 to 30% of athletes at varying levels that are taking banned substances or substances that will be banned down the road.
Well,
knowingly.
We're going to take a caller real quick from area code 858.
Sure.
Area code 858, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to add a little bit from my perspective of having done doping control in the Salt Lake Olympics and being a physician who's interested in this thing. And that is, I agree that I think there's a lot more doping going on than we currently acknowledge ourselves. But to some extent, that's kind of a reflection of what we do in our own society. And I think we're kind of set up in the sense that we all want to see a record broken. That's a vicarious thrill to watch that. We are not interested, as one of the French cyclists said in the Tour de France, of watching somebody win when they go up the hill at 10 miles an hour and last year's doped cyclist made it at 20. So we have a role in this. Very few of us are going to flip our TVs off if we think the world's record is going to be broken. Very few people stopped watching Barry Bonds, even though he looked so grossly different from what he was at one point in time when he finally broke the record. In fact, those tickets couldn't get him. So there's kind of this thing that we do in our own lives, if you will, cosmetic surgery, the best bike, the best piece of equipment. We all want to win, and I think we contribute to this to some extent.
Well, I couldn't agree more. It's society basically is contributing, and even the organizations are contributing to that. That's what we want to see. We want to see our athletes do well, and we want them to win. And you know, it puts bottoms in the seats, and it puts cash back into the fold to keep growing the grassroots level of these athletes too.
Go ahead.
I also think that. You know, there's this huge financial piece that pushes all of this stuff.
Yeah.
The sponsors of the Olympics, the sponsors of so many things, are so dependent on the dollars that come in from advertising that I'm not so sure that they always want to catch somebody. And there's another technique that the athletes use, and I didn't hear it mentioned before, and that is they stack drugs. If you take small doses of several different drugs, you won't go over the thresholds, which are set actually quite high, to accommodate natural selection, if you will. You can stay just underneath that point and be drugging, and you won't get caught.
Yeah, very true.
So
can you
name some of the drugs that they might use to stack that way? It's just like drinking alcohol and you know, as long as you go over the legal line, you're okay. Is any drugs that comes to mind to you that you know of that they can be using?
Yeah, you can take the EPO, and the trigger for EPO would be a hematocrit or blood concentration that goes over a certain level. If you stay under that, then they won't go ahead and test you actually for the EPO itself. You're just under it. If they have a high suspicion or if you go over that, then they'll actually use the more expensive test. I think Floyd Landis is a good example of that. Nobody takes testosterone one night before a big race. Doesn't make any sense.
No.
And what happened to him is that when he went over the threshold after that really difficult day where he got dehydrated and probably his blood got concentrated, he went over. They went back and they looked at his other samples, all of which had been negative, only to discover that he was taking synthetic steroids, and clearly any synthetic steroid or testosterone-like substance isn't something your body makes. My bet is that if they had gone and tested everybody else's second bottle, that they would have come up with so many more people in the Tour de France that were positive than Floyd. He just kind of had the bad luck of getting caught that way. And so you can stack a small dose of steroids, a small dose of EPO, a small dose of whatever else comes along, and my bet is, and a book I've just finished writing kind of predicts that we're going to have DNA doping. There already are animal models in the laboratory where you change DNA and you grow muscle at prodigious rates, and you don't have to work very hard to win. And there's no way to test for that right now. So as your other speaker said, they're always going to be ahead of the curve there.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate all the information.
Okay.
And taking that particular light, I mean, that's some good information. I'm glad the caller called in for that. I guess it's like anything in society. we're always going to try to always beat the system, then versus just take the street that you're supposed to go. We're going to find a way to beat the system. Where's the integrity? Where's the honor? The whole system that we taught, you know, forever, that we have to now go around this to beat the system in order to play.
I don't think we're ever. Go ahead.
You think we're losing it?
I think we lost it a long time ago. It's sad to say. And will we get back to that? It's very difficult because, as the caller had mentioned, and as I can concur, they're always ahead of the curve on a lot of different things. And you mentioned the DNA is the next thing that they're going to be looking at in order to get one step further and everything else. So, the sponsorship dollars and money talks and if you've got a lot of sponsorship there and it's unfortunately it's just not going to change anytime soon because you've got big corporations behind a lot of these athletes and the Olympics and things of that nature that just won't back off anytime soon. So. It's something, how are you going to clean it up? You got too many different levels to clean up all at once. You got to start somewhere, and perhaps maybe it's at the Olympic level, or perhaps it's at the grassroots level, but it's got to get stopped somewhere because it's not going to get any better.
What advice do you have for the industry and to parents regarding the pressures of just winning at all costs?
Well, specifically for the parents and for the kids, it's all about, let's let the kids have fun because that's what it all means. There's Olympic athletes out there. I'll go back to the top level again. You open an Olympic athlete and I just go out there and do my best. Well, that's kind of taking everybody off guard that has this win at all cost mentality. So, get it back to the grassroots for the kids. Make sure they're having fun. Make sure there's great. They're instilling the sportsmanlike or the great sportsmanship for kids. Handshakes before and after the game, and don't put any pretty pressures on the kids. And certainly, by all means, don't. Don't shout at them during sporting events. And there's always a great rule, too, that I go back to when you're starting to talk to parents and coaches and stuff like that. Well, parents specifically, though, the only three words you should say at a sporting event are good, go, great. You don't want to get anything else about you should have done this or you got to go over there, or a bunch of different things because, A, kids just turn it off, and B, it's just not a positive thing. So good, go, great, or great, three great things to instill from my perspective that parents can use those three words and carry that all the way along throughout their child's athletic endeavors.
Wow. And the particular industry itself, I guess in media they say it bleeds as leads. As long as they are winning, is all good. If they lose,
yeah,
then you just have to deal with the consequences for
you. Do
so.
And you need a great support group out for that. I mean, like I said earlier, you need a great support net for all of these, whether it's youngsters, whether it's Olympic athletes, whether it's professional sports. They all need a great safety net, support net when they're coming into the up to a pro career. When they're especially when their pro career is finished. You've got to have a great support group for them, and you've got to be do a little bit of hand-holding because a lot of them, it's tough when the final whistle blows and the lights dim and their sports career is finished, and, where do they go from there? So they still need to have that support structure for them because they've given their life to their Olympic endeavors, to the professional sport. But they get cast aside like an old shoe and, not very well supported after they've hung up their cleats or their jersey for the last time. They need to be supported from day one and all the way through.
Okay. Great. Lastly, I guess talk about your show. You have a show that comes on the Blog Talk Network. Can you talk about that show and when does it air? And
sure. Sure. The show airs live every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and URL or the website address is www.beyondthecheers.com. And the last caller that called in, if I could reach out to him, I'd certainly like him to touch base with me as well. Certainly like to chat to him and have him on my show at some point in time. But for the other callers out there, as I said earlier, I do talk about everything involved with sports. It's not your typical jock show. There's a lot of things that need to come out there from my background. And things that need to be said that other radio stations and other even journalists shy away from because they're afraid to step on toes. Well, I'm not. So, but I'd like to get some stuff out there, and certainly beyondthecheers.com is where people can visit my website. And if they type in Beyond the Cheers into Google, I'm all over the first three or four pages in Google anyways, to so they can find me some way, shape, or form. I'm very easy to find.
Okay. And you also have blog articles that you do as well, not only
Yeah, there's
the
a blog that associates, Tim, with every show that I do. And tonight I'm talking to Mandy Bougeold, who is an Olympic hopeful for the Olympics this year. She's a featherweight Canadian female boxer, and this is the first time since 1904 that boxing is going to be allowed in the Olympics for females. So she's on the show tonight. Last week was lingerie football, and like I said, I talk a bit about everything. It's a good show coming up. If anybody's interested in concussions, I believe it's May 2nd. I've got two of the major manufacturers for devices that go onto helmets or go into helmets to measure a possible concussive incident. We're going to have a great debate from their side of the fence, talking to the medical side of the fence as to if these devices are the greatest things since sliced bread, or are they giving a false sense of security. But there's other shows. That, just go on the website and you'll see what I've had in the past and what's coming up in the future.
Perfect. Are you going to try and make it to the Olympics this year?
I'm doing a lot of sideline stuff with the Canadian Olympic Committee of some athletes' interviews and things of that nature, but it's not on the cards at this particular point to venture off to England, but who knows? Things may change. I'd like to go there and see a few of the athletes I've had on the show and talk to them but I don't mind calling them either, so it's just if I get there, fine. If not, then there's always the 2014 Russia Games coming up that I'm for certain going to as well. So one day at a time.
Okay. Again, thank you. I really appreciate you coming on to the program. Thank you so very much.
No, thanks, Tim. I really appreciate you taking the time to having me on your show, and hopefully it was some benefit to your listening audience out there. And like I said, if anybody out there, reach out. If anybody wants to chat or punt me an email, just beyondthecheers.com is the one-stop shop to get a hold of me. And thanks again.
Great. Thanks, Dave Ferguson, Beyond the Field. Take care. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. This has been another production of Apple Capital Group, the Core Business Show. So you can download this show on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. If you do go to iTunes, it's available as well. But if you can do us a favor, write a review on this particular episode. It will help the show out and help the guest out. Thank you for listening to the program again, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.